Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Schinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review at Jurnov, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free and available when they're interested in listening to it. Today, we have an excellent show as we dive into the murky world of metadata. No eDiscovery conference is complete without at least one session dedicated to metadata. Invariably, much of the audience has no idea what it means. Yet, in today's world of more complex search engines, metadata is taking on an even more important significance than just evidence. I know this is a challenge for some lawyers, but metadata can be a process tool as well to save money, as well as revealing smoking guns. Without that teaser thrown out there, we have an outstanding panel for this show. Our first guest, John Rosenthal, has an excellent background to discuss this topic. He was one of the architects of an eDiscovery process at another Am Law 100 law firm before leaving to join Winston Strawn to continue designing his vision of how eDiscovery process should evolve. In fact, we did an excellent podcast on building an effective eDiscovery process a month ago, which I highly recommend. John is the chairman of Winston Strawn's eDiscovery and Electronic Information Practice Group. He also lectures across the United States on the issues of electronic discovery and record retention programs. He's also a participant in the Sedona Conference on Best Practices for Electronic Discovery and Records Management. John's also an advisory board member of the Georgetown University Law Center, Continuing Legal Education eDiscovery Institute, LexisNexis Surety, Inc., and Electronic Evidence, Inc. Our other guest, Bill Butterfield, actually recommended doing this podcast to me. Bill's a partner at Hossfield LLP, which is a global claimants law firm. He focuses his practice on antitrust litigation and electronic discovery. Bill developed his interest in electronic discovery in the early 1990s when he led the design and implementation of an electronic document repository to manage more than 15 million pages of documents in In Re Prudential Securities Limited Partnerships litigation. He's testified as an expert witness on e-discovery issues and speaks frequently on that topic domestically and abroad. Bill is on the steering committee of the Sedona Conference Working Group on Electronic Document Retention and Production, where he served as editor-in-chief for the Case for Cooperation in 2009, and was co-editor of the Sedona Conference Commentary on Preservation, Identification, and Management of Sources of Information that are Not Reasonably Accessible, 2008. He's also a member of the Sedona Conference Working Group on International Electronic Information Management, Discovery, and Disclosure. Bill also serves on the faculty of Georgetown University Law Center's Advanced eDiscovery Institute. Bill, great to have you on the show as well. John, looking forward to doing this one. And, first of all, for the two of you, is it more fun to do podcasts together or litigate against each other?
Well, John, do you want first crack at that? I'm interested in your answer.
Bill and I get along on a great level, both inside of litigation and outside of litigation. I think both of us have realized that there's such a layer of complexity in this area that if you don't cooperate and don't work together, it's not in your client's best interest. And also, it's not fun. Arguing all day long with your opposition is not fun. We'd rather agree on the basics and move forward and focus on the merits of the case. And have a couple beers along the way.
There you go. And actually, John and I have litigated against each other for quite a while now. And I remember talking about metadata with John many years ago. One of the things that I most like about working with John is he's a very creative guy, and we've actually come up with some pretty innovative solutions to other e-discovery problems, which others are copying in other lawsuits now. So it is fun to work against him, and it's fun to do podcasts with him.
Okay, well, let's jump into the topic here, and let's start with the required definition of metadata. And Bill, since you suggested this podcast, you get the honors. Just what is metadata, and why do we care about it?
Well, metadata, basically is information that's associated with and made part of an electronic document that's not visible in the normal viewing or printing of that document. So it's often described as data about data. It's information that might document different aspects of a set of data, such as attributes or deleted text, comments, field lengths, locations, associations, ownership, quality, etc. And it's important to know that there are different types of metadata, and that's often where I think lawyers and frankly courts make mistakes, because there are different types of metadata, and depending on those types, there are different reasons for needing those types of metadata or not needing them. So, and basically these types are known as system metadata, which is basically data that's automatically generated by a computer system. So, for example, metadata that would include the author, the date, the time of creation, or the data document was modified is typically within the category of system metadata. There's also a category sometimes called substantive metadata, other times called application metadata. That type of metadata reflects substantive changes made to a document by the user. And that, in my opinion, is where a lot of the fights about production come in. And there's another type of metadata called embedded metadata, which is, for example, in a spreadsheet, the formulas that are embedded within the spreadsheet, and these are, again, types of information that are not typically visible to the user viewing, for example, a printed copy or even a TIFF image of a document. So it's very important, I think, for all of the participants in a lawsuit to know about the various types of metadata, because that will make a difference, I think, in whether or not a particular type should be produced or not.
So, John, what's the big deal about producing everything with metadata? Why, why don't you just give an example maybe of a situation when you wouldn't want to produce metadata?
Well, I think it's important to understand, and I think that Bill really hit the issue on the head. A lot of this is just total lack of understanding and education in terms of what people want. Let me give you an example. The system metadata that Bill has talked about. And let's take the Microsoft Office suite, Word, PowerPoint, et cetera. If you take a Microsoft Office document, there are about 90 to 120 fields of system metadata associated with that. And, you know, people might, if they don't know what we're talking about, when you go to save a Word document, this box comes up with a lot of statistics in it. And those statistic fields, author, to, from, last access, last modified, those are system metadata fields. Now, some of those fields you want in litigation because presumably you're going to produce your documents and have them loaded in the Lit support system. And for the Lit support system to read, access, and manage that, you need certain basic fields of metadata. But in most of your civil litigation, the overwhelming majority of that kind of metadata is just not relevant. It has no bearing on the merits of the case. It has really no need for any practical purposes. So the question is, why do you want to produce that? So that's one issue. The other thing is, you know, I don't necessarily really care about which metadata I produced. I really care about the cost of producing it, because it's not from an ESI processing standpoint that's expensive or burdensome. It could be, depending on the type of ESI you're working with. It's really a question of review. Generally, if you're producing something, you want to review it. System metadata is typically going to be less high risk than application or embedded metadata, but if you're going to agree to produce a document natively, or if you're going to agree to produce the metadata, that kind of metadata, you want to know what's in your documents, particularly with that embedded or application metadata, because that's the kind of metadata that might have, and I emphasize might, have privileged information in it. So it's not really a question of producing everything or not producing everything. It's really a question of what's the cost and burden involved.
Well, Bill, let's talk about the utility of metadata. And, you know, as an e-discovery vendor, I love metadata because it can assist with the review of ESI. Do you have some examples of how metadata can help?
Yeah, I love that question because I've heard, you know, attorneys, I've seen judges say that, well, I've never seen any metadata that's really relevant and it's going to make any difference in proving somebody's claims. And largely that's not the point. The point is, and let me take you back. I don't know if John's old enough to experience these days, but I certainly am. And the days when everything was in paper and you would send teams of lawyers into some warehouse somewhere that was typically not air conditioned and in a bad part of town, and they would review paper for months and months and months, and they would select the paper that they, you know, wanted produced, and then it would be photocopied and produced, and then teams of lawyers would review that paper for months and months and months and code each document. And the coding, there would be a coding sheet, and the coding sheet would be divided into two parts. And the first part would deal with objective information. You know, who authored a document? When was it authored? When was it sent? Who received it? What's the subject line? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The second part of the coding sheet would be substantive issues. You know, what key issues, is the document hot, et cetera. Now, with metadata, you know, what took in the past months and months for lawyers to do can now be done automatically with the push of a button. So you can, if you have metadata fields that, let's take emails, all right, they're going to include the authors of the documents, recipients, dates, and certain other information. Now you can push a button and populate on some sort of electronic document repository all of that objective information that took lots of money and lots of time to do in the past. That's why metadata, that's one reason why metadata is important. Another reason why metadata is important from the user's perspective is that, and especially with newer technology, with more analytics, let's take social networking, for example. Let's say that, and John and I are both antitrust lawyers, and in the antitrust world, oftentimes you're dealing with communications and patterns of communication. So you're trying to find out, for example, who's talking to whom, and how often they're talking, who's at the hub of those conversations. And now with advanced analytics and through metadata, you can trace all of that, and I can know how often people are talking. I can know the sort of the pattern of communications before particular events, like price increases, take place. So there's a wealth of information that can be garnered from metadata. Can I get that information manually? Yeah, but at great expense, and it would take a long time to do. With teams of lawyers, the old-fashioned way.
That was a good answer.
I largely agree with what Bill has to say, but again, you have to be careful. You know, there's particularly for the unsophisticated in technology. You know, there's an overreaction that I need all metadata. I need it all. I want it all. As Judge Grimm likes to say, I want it all and I want a pony. You know, that's not necessary, and it's frankly not needed. You know, for example, Bill's talking about, I want to do email maps. I want to be able to trace communications and threads through emails. Well, I agree with Bill. In an antitrust case, that can be a valuable tool. But the reality is that most email threading tools and maps can operate with maybe 10 or less fields of metadata. That's not all the metadata, and that's not necessarily why you need everything in native. So you have to be careful, and you have to be reasonable given the kind of case it is, the kind of ESI it is, and what your goals are. And I think Bill and I will agree that anybody who gets in a fight with their opposition over metadata is probably making a mistake. You shouldn't really have fights over metadata unless you have the diametrically opposed parties of the unsophisticated versus where it's, I want it all and I want the pony. That may be a legitimate fight, but for the most part, and I think, you know, when Bill and I and when other people who know this stuff get in negotiations, you know, we're not usually fighting about total extremes. It's, you know, I need five more fields here, or maybe you don't need this field here. And it's not a fight of all metadata versus no metadata.
Yeah, and I typically, you know, if I face somebody on the other side who's being, in my opinion, unreasonable, my response is likely to be fine. I'll just get it native. I'll take it native if that's how you want it. So we can have that fight. And there's lots of give and take in meeting and conferring about all of these discovery issues. And it's, you know, so if you are reasonable about metadata, I might be more willing to say, okay, I'll take TIFF plus metadata plus extract text. It's all interrelated with production format issues, and you know, it's difficult to have this conversation without talking about a sort of a greater topic, which is production format issues generally, because it involves a lot of different things, metadata being one of them.
Yeah, before we go into, when, you know, the time frame of when you're asking for this and how you ask for it, one of the concerns John raised was about having to look further at the metadata to know what you're giving up. I mean, every defense attorney's biggest nightmare is a surprise, okay? On the other side, how often do you review metadata, or is it really how the tool's treating the metadata for you? Do you find yourself reviewing metadata very often?
Bill? We actually do. Now, there may be an exception. More and more with the cost of e-discovery, you're having clients more willing to do quick peeks or willing to do some kind of a quick peek with at least certain kinds of documents. If I got to produce, 1,000 contracts in an antitrust matter, am I going to look at every contract? No, I'll probably produce the contracts with a quick peek and or with a clawback agreement. But for larger, more high-risk litigation, we definitely are. And in fact, one of the challenges that we look at is if we're agreeing to produce metadata, be it system embedded or application, we need to look at that. And kind of curiously, some of the tool sets out there, review tool sets, really aren't set up to do that easily. And that can really add to the cost of review, because if your reviewer has to look at a document from two or three different views to get that look, that can be expensive. Every time you add seconds to a reviewer's job is real money. And some of this, you can't even do in the review system. You got to do it on the processing end. So you make sure that you're processing the documents in a way that you're capturing those metadata fields, and that's one way to attack it.
But Bill, are you looking at the metadata typically, or is it really what the system's telling you using the metadata to enhance your review?
Yeah, I'm usually looking at it. Well, it depends. If there's, again, you have to go back to the different types of metadata. So if I have a case where I have a spreadsheet production And I would want that usually in native because I want the formulas embedded within those spreadsheets. If it's a particular subject for which the formulas are important, yes. But more often I'm using it simply to search and to sort through documents, and that again saves me enormous amounts of time and money. And I'm waiting for the day when I can, you know, if I have an opponent who just doesn't understand metadata and is, you know, it's like walking into court and saying, Judge, you know, I want to make this more expensive for the other side, and I want to make this more time-consuming, and I want to have extra delay for the court. And that's what I think the courts don't understand sometimes, is that metadata is a tool that saves everybody money and time, depending on the type of metadata. There are types, and I figured John would bring this up, but there are types of metadata that will add certainly extra review time and expense to his side. For example, if I wanted different versions of documents and I wanted the redline versions of documents, John's told me this in the past, and I think he's right. That means he's got to review every version and all the comment fields in those redlines and everything else for privilege. And it does add to the cost of review. So again, it's knowing what metadata you need, why you need it, and if the parties have an understanding of the area, I think most times they're going to be in agreement.
So let's go into sort of the process of getting it. When's the best time to discuss the production of metadata in a case, Bill?
As early as possible. I mean, this is where, you know, if you read the case law in the area, and if you read the case law regarding production format issues generally, you're going to see that when the requesting party does not tell the producing party how it wants its documents, and the producing party goes and processes reviews and produces, and then the requesting party comes back and said, wait a minute, I wanted metadata, or wait a minute, I want it in this format or that format, then oftentimes it's too late. And the courts are saying, wait a minute, you know, this is expensive. I'm not going to make the producing party go back and do it again. Although, with respect to metadata, if you look at the committee notes to Rule 34, there is some authority saying you're supposed to produce documents in a usable format. And, you know, I could see a judge saying, wait a minute, producing party, are you using the metadata? Well, yes, we are, Your Honor. So you took that document and you changed the nature of the document from ESI, and you created a static TIFF image, and thereby reduced the usability of that document. What does that do with respect to Rule 34's requirement that you produce it in a reasonably usable format? So I don't think a producing party can just assume that in every case they're going to be able to produce a document however they want to do it, even if the requesting party hasn't asked for metadata. But obviously, my advice would be to raise that at the very earliest opportunity, because it's going to affect how documents are processed, how they're accounted for at the production end, the producing party end, and it is problematic for the producing party to have to go back and do it all over again if you haven't been diligent about telling them how you want documents produced.
And John, do you agree these type of issues are best dealt up front?
Absolutely not. I think you should litigate the heck out of them. No, I think that, look, the reality is that the whole design of Rule 26F under the amended rules is to take the cost and risk of e-discovery out through motion practice and later sanction motions by the parties getting in a room as early as possible and agreeing on a framework of discovery, which includes production format, which necessarily includes metadata and what metadata you're going to produce and what metadata you're not going to produce. And the earlier you can do that, the better. And you should, again, absent, you know, extreme positions, I think it's pretty much unbelievable that you end up in front of a judge on this issue. If you end up in front of a judge on this issue, it's because you have a unique, really piece of ESI that may be central in the litigation, and there's a true legitimate battle over a particular kind of metadata, or you just have two unreasonable parties that haven't woken up after Rule 26F was put into place.
And, you know, sort of a I did a little bit of advanced research for this podcast. I was cleaning my desk, and I noticed a National Law Journal article on metadata from January 26th of 2009. And in that article, it basically Wayne Mattis from Winthrop Straw and Melissa Geis from Reed Smith said the trend is if you ask for metadata early on, you're most likely going to get it. And is that still true, John?
I think you are. I mean, I'm not seeing a ton of, you know, the battle I'm seeing right now is native versus non-native.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually not a battle over metadata fields in terms of system metadata. Usually the battle is either the document in native is really not useful. You might have a massive Excel spreadsheet that you just couldn't read if you produced it in a TIFF. Or more recently, and Bill notes this, more and more, particularly plaintiffs, are going to review platforms that are very sophisticated with second-generation search capabilities, clustering, concepting, email mapping tools, threading tools, and in many of those products, if you load it with native, you are able to do more with some of the analytics. I think it is a misnomer, and I've done a lot of research on this, that you need, you know, the documents in native to do a lot of these analytics. Some of the systems, they certainly perform better in native, but it doesn't mean you can't do some of the analytics. So that's kind of what I'm seeing in terms of trends.
Okay. Well, one of the initial problems that came out with metadata is its volatility, you know, and you know, because its field, especially system metadata, you know, even application metadata, and, you know, everyone knows it's really hard to preserve everything, all ESI in a big company. You know, litigation hold process sometimes looks like a fishing net as opposed to Fort Knox. Lots of stuff can swim in and out without any bad intent being present. So isn't there also a fear factor here that metadata is like DNA, and if we don't just preserve it as well as CSI people do at crime scenes, that this can be another case for gotcha and spoliation games we played? And now, I guess, John, since you're on the producing side, do you have any fears at all about that, or is that?
Well, I do, and you know, the reality is that the number of sanction cases and some of the gamesmanship we are seeing with sanction cases has put a real fear complex in with not just clients but with their outside counsel, and then you also have this, you know, relationship between outside counsel and their clients, where, you know, the outside counsel's attitude is, oh, you got to preserve everything, you have to forensically lock down everything, you know, you have to oversave because outside counsel doesn't want to get blamed for something. And then the client's sitting there, look, I got to run a business, I'm not in the litigation preservation business. Now with ESI, that becomes a big issue because or with metadata, it becomes a big issue because in majority of your cases, the system metadata is just not really key to the case. I'm not saying don't produce it, but it's not key to the case. So let me give you an example. If I take a Word document and I drag it from my desktop to the server or from my desktop to a folder, that's actually going to change at least two and possibly three of the metadata fields. Now, that changes in those metadata fields in 99.9% of the civil litigation in the world are totally irrelevant. And I might, if I'm a company that doesn't have robust tools available or a lot of forensic tools available, tell my custodians, look, in order to preserve the relevant documents here, I would like you to create a legal hold folder and drag and drop your Word documents into that folder so that they're in one location for ensured preservation and collection. Well, you know what? That's pretty darn reasonable because not all companies should be required to go out and pay tens of thousands of dollars for a legal hold program or a search and retrieval program or a collection program to pristinely preserve those three fields of metadata, again, in 99.9% of your litigation. Yet, I have seen numerous times where plaintiffs go in and try and create spoliation motions because the method of that preservation, dragging to those folders, changes these metadata fields, which the plaintiff knows has absolutely no relevance in that case. Now, with all that said, there are exceptions to that rule, and there may be unique cases, and I think Bill and I can talk about those kinds of cases, where that metadata is critical, and maybe you do need to go to that other expensive end. But I am seeing this gotcha game at least tried, and I am seeing it creating problems for companies, particularly your smaller and mid-sized companies that don't have the resources or the infrastructure in place to put in a full e-discovery program.
So, Bill, the 26F, when you're really talking about what you're going to do on the defense side and, you know, cover, you know, possible changes on metadata to do a collection this way, or is that too much information to share? I mean, what's your reaction to that problem?
I mean, I have a similar reaction to John. I mean, I would want to know what's been done, but unless I think it has some particular importance to the case, if after a litigation hold obligation took effect, if the company stripped all the metadata, did something like that, then I would be pretty curious. But if you're talking about dragging and dropping into folders and changing those sort of unique aspects of metadata, unless it had some particular importance to what I was trying to prove, I don't think it would be, you know, I would want to know about it, but it wouldn't really cause me to do anything. I don't believe in, you know, in spoliation motions, I wouldn't file one unless I thought that the information that's been lost that somehow impacts my case, what I'm trying to prove.
All right, and I'll let you make the point one last time the other way, Bill. Don't you agree it's rare that metadata is something that can turn a case like OJ's glove? There's no gotcha. You know, here's the metadata, Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Well,
doesn't happen very often.
It is important. I think Judge Grimm has pointed this out in a case. It is important if you're dealing with evidentiary issues on authentication. But I think I was upfront about why I think metadata is important. It's not to prove it's something in a case unless it's a unique kind of case. But it's highly valuable and extremely important in order to sort through information and to use information in ways that will explain what was going on, patterns of communication, et cetera. That's just as important as maybe finding the smoking gun document in a case. You have to be able to go through, in our types of cases, you're going through millions of documents and you're spending millions of dollars doing it. So metadata is extremely important to me in order to reduce the time of review and reduce the cost of review.
Yeah, I'm going to I'm going to take the plaintiff side for a second. I think there is that minority of cases that where there is that gotcha moment. And again, we're talking about a very small percentage, but particularly in the last 2 years with the downturn in the economy, we're seeing a lot more, still a very small percentage. In a trade secrets case or a theft of trade secrets case, you know, it's often important where we're doing forensic examinations of data not to identify, you know, the embedded metadata or the track changes. But, for example, we're just trying to establish that, for example, a former employee took a document, for example, a customer list, and it took it off the company server, and it moved it to perhaps a thumb drive, and then from the thumb drive, it loaded it on its new company computer, and then people accessed it on the new company system. Well, in those kinds of cases, those metadata fields, even the few that get changed by dragging and dropping, last access, last modified, those are extremely important fields, and I've used those fields in numerous of these kinds of cases to actually get you or do the gotcha. So in those minority of cases, those kinds of metadata fields are extremely important, and that's the exception to the rule. But again, you know that early on when the case gets filed or when you bring the case, and it's your job in that Rule 26 conference to raise that and say these are important issues and we expect you to preserve that and collect it and produce it, and this is not the typical case where you know, you can just produce maybe 10-15 fields of metadata and we're going to be okay.
Yeah, John, you're absolutely right. That was a great example. I'm going to give you a plaintiff's card that you can carry in your wallet.
Thousands of listeners, you've heard John's gone to the other side. You heard it here first.
Bill, I prefer a free beer.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you, and I'm sorry, Bill. I enjoyed hearing your process analysis as someone on the technology side. You know, you can't hear that enough. So, and John, really enjoyed your points there as well. Been a good podcast. I appreciate having you both on another show here. Hopefully we'll be able to do more shows again in the future. To the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our show. You can also remember our show and website phonetically as Easy Bytes of ESI information. However you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Schinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review from Jurnov, wishing you a nice day.